Have you ever found yourself in an abusive relationship and found how difficult it is to leave? Today, we're talking about why it can be so challenging to leave abusive relationships and how to spot the signs that you may be in an abusive relationship. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast, head over to therelationshipmazepodcast.com. If you'd like to find out how you can build and develop more fulfilling relationships, head over to therelationshipmaze.com and press subscribe right now. Welcome to today's podcast, and today we're talking about how it can be so challenging to leave an abusive relationship.
Yeah, so you might have had an experience, or you might at the moment find yourself in a relationship which is abusive, or you might also have a friend who frequently describes a situation where they're in a relationship that you consider to be abusive. And you might wonder, well, why is it so difficult for this friend, for example, to exit this relationship? Or why am I still in this relationship with somebody who doesn't treat me very well? Now, we could be talking for hours about this topic. Actually, it's really quite complex and there's quite a lot that we could cover. But we thought today we'd just sort of talk about sort of some of the pointers around this that might help you to identify what the difficulties are about getting away from an abusive relationship, because it's actually incredibly difficult to leave a partner who is abusive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things as well is to recognize as well, when we're talking about abusive relationships, it's not just physical abuse, It's also emotional abuse, which I think may be just as prevalent, if not more prevalent, and is often unrecognized. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly in the UK, it was only 5 or 6 years ago, I think, that emotional abuse was really recognized as an offense.
As a crime.
As a crime.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and before that, you know, there was often the attitude that, well, you know, these things just happen, and it's not about recognition that it is abusive. So some things were happening, and very, very, you know, difficult for people to handle and be in that experience. Mm-hmm. But there was no validation that actually there was something wrong with us.
Absolutely. I mean, often there's just this association with abuse as being physical abuse, or when somebody's being hit, usually most of the time, but not all of the time, I want to come back to that. A lot of the time it's men hitting women, but it's not always like that. There are also women who hit their partners. You'd be surprised how often that happens. And also really just to highlight that abusive relationships can really work across both, it works across all genders. So it can be, a man can be abusive, a woman can be abusive. You can be in a relationship where either partner is abusive. And it's also happening across social classes. Really, there is no evidence from the research that there are specific parts of society which are more affected by it. Although arguably we come back to that in a minute, because we also talk a little bit about attachment styles and insecure attachment and how that impacts on abusive relationships. So maybe there's more likely to be an insecure attachment in families where there's a lot of social deprivation. So, but again, that's another discussion that we could have another time. So just to highlight that abuse happens to men, it happens to women, it happens in heterosexual or homosexual relationships, it happens across religious groups, it happens in all sorts of settings, because one of the crucial factors in abusive relationships is attachment, and that really is, that affects all of us because we're human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's should we talk about the four stages of abuse first of all?
That might be quite helpful as a starter.
Yeah. So sometimes it's described that the cycle of abuse, we can categorize it into four different stages, which can just help people understand these patterns of abuse that occurs in relationship, and also helps us to understand why it can be so difficult for people who experience abuse to leave the situation, because you know it is really challenging. And if you've been in this situation and stuck, just to also know in yourself just how difficult it is to leave, and just know that you know that's nothing to do with you. It's nothing that's kind of found about you that's kind of caused you to stay in this for some time. I've experienced this myself in the past as well, where you know, it's so difficult to leave this type of situation.
Shall we start with the four stages or with the trauma bond? Which is the a good starting point here? Maybe let's start with the four stages, and we talk about trauma bond and attachment styles as well. So what's the sort of first stage in the abuse cycle?
Okay, so the first stage that's often talked about is the tension stage. So the tension is when there's usually some sort of external stressors, so things on the outside that begin with within that person who is the abuser. These could be to do with like things going on outside, maybe at work. It could be things maybe in the family. It could be financial pressures, or you know, just exhaustion, maybe even hormonal factors. But when an abusive partner feels that this tension is building outside, well, because of these factors, frustration tends to build up over time. This kind of builds up internally, which can develop more sort of feelings of anger, more sense of loss of control. And the person who is the victim of abuse, they'll often find that, you know, this need to ease the tension, because they want to avoid this abusive episode from happening in the first place. So at this point, it's often the case that the person who's at risk of being abused starts to feel anxiety. They might feel that sense of having to walk on eggshells, or just have to be really careful around their partner, because they don't want to do something that could trigger the reaction in their partner.
Absolutely. But then there comes a point in the abuse cycle where, you know, the sort of tension rises, there's brooding resentment on the part of the abuser. And then at some point there is the assault or the crisis point, where this resentment actually finds expression either in a violent eruption, and that could be either physical or it could be verbal. So it could be just attacking the partner, the other partner, the abused partner. And that can take many forms. As I say, that can be actually hitting. It can be lashing out by calling the other partner names, or by putting them down, by, you know, sort of belittling the partner. So it can take in many, it can take many shapes or forms, this kind of the assault phase of the cycle.
Yeah, or sometimes called the incident phase. Now, again, this is often about the person who's the abuser unconsciously wanting to gain control or regain control, or to feel that they have power, because they have that feeling, maybe that's that sense that they lost power. So this sort of behaviour, the abusive behaviour, is often that sort of that way of trying to gain control, trying to gain that perceived power. And the blame for their behaviour will often be put onto the partner. So, you know, for example, if the abuser is physically or emotionally aggressive or abusive, they'll blame the partner, saying it's their fault because they made them mad, for example.
That's right. So it's always the other, it's always the abused partner's fault. Usually that's what happens. Good, and then the next stage then is the reconciliation or honeymoon phase, and we'll come back to that in a bit more detail, because that's a really crucial phase in terms of the dynamics of abuse. This is the phase where the abuser shows some regret. They say, well, I'm really sorry, and, you know, I didn't really mean to be quite so mean to you. Well, you know, I've had a bad day. So they kind of indicate to the abused partner that things are going to be all right again. They make some sort of amends, even just tiny ones, that that acknowledge that some abuse has taken place.
Yeah, and well, actually, I think this can be even more subtle than that. So talking from my own experience, basically, I think it's not even where the partner even visibly makes amends, but maybe there's that indication that the relationship won't be over.
Right.
So the sort of like, which gives the person being abused that sort of hope that actually maybe things will be okay. So sometimes there's not even particularly outward expressions that actually they love you, or kind of everything's all right, or even any sort of sense of, you know, just trying to make things better, but just a sense that actually, you know, you won't lose that relationship, which if the person being abused is more insecurely attached, I think you're going to be much more kind of prone to that sense that you don't want to lose the other person, which we'll talk about more.
Yeah, this is the crucial, this is the really crucial bit. And you're right, it doesn't have to be an outward apology, but it's sort of some indication that they care about you, yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah, or that even, and this is what, for just again, talking from a little about personal experience in the past, where there's a sense that maybe even they don't really overly express they care about you, but there's a possibility they might care about you in the future you've experienced that they've cared about you before, and you think, well, you know, if I keep, you know, if I keep going along with this, whatever, then, you know, that was great before, so maybe it could be great again. So there's that sense, you
the
know,
sense of
distortion.
Hope. The sense of hope, really, that's really crucial, Okay.
But of course, depending on that pattern, with some people, it is the outward signs of, you know, just love bombing sometimes as well, that abusers will sometimes do. It does vary. So it can be subtle, or it can be quite obvious.
Yeah, it can be like chocolates or flowers or that sort of thing. That sort of presentation.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And then the next stage, so we've had the sort of reconciliation honeymoon, and then things kind of go back to where they were, like normal. There's a sense of relative calm in the relationship,
Yeah, more a sense of calm, or kind of like some calm after the storm. And, you know, that may be totally calm, or it may not be completely calm. Then, you know, it just, that will vary as well, but it's certainly calmer. And, you know, the abusive partner, you know, sometimes may apologise, sometimes not. They'll often blame the abuse on outside factors, like work, or it could be, you know, a member of the family that's, you know, saying, well, it's because of this situation, that's not their fault, there's nothing they could do about it. So there's still the shifted blame outside of themselves. Or even, you know, often the abuser denies the blame, or any denies that abuse occurred in the first place, or saying it wasn't that bad. You know, you're making a big deal of it.
Yeah, so there's certainly no processing that takes place of any kind of abuse. There's no talk about it, there's no acknowledgement of it, there is no discussion of what actually happened, of the assault that took place or the violent incident. It's sort of, it gets swept under the carpet. It's not talked about.
Sometimes though, the abuser will show remorse and kind of promise it won't happen again. So this is, sometimes people that I've worked with, or people that I've spoken to who have been in situations of abuse, so I think from those that I've spoken to, I get a sense that maybe particularly with more physical abuse, there's that promise that it won't happen again. With emotional abuse, I don't know. I don't know if it's, it differs in terms of how people express these things. But, you know, sometimes it's just, it is that, I think that emotional abuse, that denying that things happened or were as bad, tends to be maybe a way that it is expressed.
There are many different forms here, but it's a sort of a rough, it's this kind of return to normality in inverted commas, what do you consider to be normal in this kind of cycle. And then the next step is that the next phase is that there is another renewed build-up of tension, so because there's some stress that comes into play again for the abuser, so there's a build-up which then effectively, you know, the tension is rising again and again, and we enter the cycle again as we did.
Yeah, absolutely. And because we introduced it as a four-stage model, but actually, because you just added that extra on which Christine Sanderson kind of added. It's often talked about the four steps where that kind of renewed build-up is actually put together with the tension build-up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that fifth stage you just mentioned, you can be useful to think about when you read about it on the internet. It's often like four stages, to clarify what we're talking about.
Okay, so we thought it might be really helpful to also look in a bit more detail at one of the key factors in the cycle in keeping you in an abusive relationship, or anyone who is in an abusive relationship. You know, why is it so difficult? It's back to this question that I posed at the beginning of this episode. Why is it so difficult for somebody who is in an abusive relationship to leave it? Because, you know, on the face of it, most of us would say, well, you know, if it's that hard, if somebody's so horrible to you, just get out of it. That's what most people would say. And arguably, yes, that is true if you have the capacity to get out, so to speak. But there are factors that keep you in. And one of the biggest factors is what we call the trauma bond, the kind of super glue that bonds the abuser and the abused person together. So if you think about if you think about a sort of situation of danger, think about what happens with a child, for example. If a child is being threatened by danger, by a dangerous situation, what they do naturally is they seek refuge by running to the person who's looking after them, usually the parent. And a very similar thing happens in relationships, because our partners are a kind of attachment figure for us. So if you're being threatened, if we're feeling that something bad is going to happen to us, we usually tend to run to the person who is most close to us, because we want to be soothed. And what we have in the case of domestic abuse, an abusive relationship, is this weird paradox that the very person who we are turning to for soothing, for taking care of us, is also the person that is actually creating the fear in the first place. So we have this weird paradox that happens here. This kind of creates all these tensions in people who are abused, and it creates this weird, what's also called cognitive dissonance, this weird sort of sensation of what's, you know, this weird, a different interpretation of what actually happens. So that there's anxiety in the person who's abused. They become more and more anxious in this kind of cycle of abuse. And at the same time, they also become more and more dependent on the person who abuses them. So the abuser, him or herself, becomes more and more powerful and also has more and more control in the situation. And this is what's called the trauma bond. Or also another term that's often used is the Stockholm syndrome. So because you know that, on some level you know that you are dependent on your abuser, you also kind of know that the best way forward, and I'm not talking about cognitive knowing, just sort of knowing instinctively, so to speak, you also know that the best way maybe to stick around somebody who's potentially dangerous is to placate them or to appease them.
Yeah, and with this sort of a cyclic nature of abuse as well, this becomes very confusing. It becomes very sort of something where we feel it can be quite confusing, where, you know, basically if somebody treated you badly all the time, you probably would leave them.
Yeah.
However, the problem with this sort of this abusive relationships is it's a lot of the time you might be treated badly, but it's not all the time. So there's times where this person does show maybe kind of a nice side, maybe does even kind of go over the top and seem loving. Maybe say, you know, that you're their soulmate, or kind of treat you well in some other way. And so that's going to be quite confusing and disarming, because, you know, sometimes it feels like, well, actually, maybe this is going to change. Maybe this is just a temporary thing. So basically, as we begin, we gain that sort of sense of trust of the other person when they act in a different way. So we may sort of suppress, we might ignore our memories of their past behaviour. And then the cycle begins again.
Yeah, and because there's so much emotional intensity in this exchange, isn't there? Particularly when there is a, you know, when there's been the high drama of the assault period, the assault part of the cycle, and then the honeymoon phase, the reconciliation. It feels so amazing then to feel good again, to feel loved again by your partner. So to feel love-bombed, for example, by your partner. So that really, it heightens the sense of, oh, this is a really good person for me, or it heightens the attachment again.
Yeah, so it is, to me, it's very much like a drug, that you get this real sort of sense of, you know, high at certain times, and then you're treated really bad, and you get a real low, you get a real slump, so it's kind of, and you feel really awful, and then suddenly things seem like they're going to be better, and, you know, when your partner treats you better, or kind of, you know, like I said, it can even be that hope of being better without it actually being hugely better. But there are moments when things are better, and suddenly you think, oh, this can be great. And if you kind of rebuild that sense that, you know, this was just something going on, and maybe kind of it was things outside, and then you get this high, then you get this low, and it's like this drug, and it's kind of, you're just seeking and just kind of wanting that great feeling back again.
Also, I think another sort of helpful model sometimes, we talked previously in other podcasts, episodes, about the fight, flight, freeze response. So what we are experiencing in our, what somebody who is abused experiences in their nervous system is a freeze response largely. So they realise that they can't really run away, they can't really fight the abusive partner. So the best way forward in this kind of scenario is to play dead, so to speak. To split off any kind of feelings about it, to actually numb yourself as well, to not think about what's just happened to you, to kind of push away all the sort of horrible feelings that you might have about the situation or your partner.
Yeah, in fact, you might begin to think about or remember or focus on those parts of the relationship that are positive, even if they're small or kind of from a long time ago.
Yeah.
You start to think, well, actually, you know, these things were great. This was, you know, this is the sense that these things are good. And, you know, because your body is basically flooded with adrenaline and cortisol, which are the stress hormones, and that kicks your body into that survival instinct, where we get that emotional and physical tension. And when we're in this as well, we might make excuses for them and justify their behaviour, just because that helps us to kind of rationalise our need to stay there. And the problem is each cycle basically reinforces this experience where essentially, you know, we have no power, we're powerless. It feels like, you know, we'll never be able to escape. And we're in a cycle where basically it's like this false reality, where we get this feeling that we need that person, that they need us, and that without that other person, we're really nothing, and that nobody else cares. And, you know, essentially this cycle keeps chipping away at our sense of self-worth and sort of how we feel about ourselves and identity, which in fact bonds us more tightly to that relationship. So it increases that sort of trauma bond.
Absolutely. And of course, what happens a lot of the time in abusive relationships is that there's a lot of shame. So the abused partner experiences a lot of shame. And shame in the sense of because they're being repeatedly told by the abuser that they're not worthy. Very often, you know, they're being told you're worthless, you're not a good person. They kind of take this on. They take on this sense of, well, there's something wrong with me, maybe. And often they get isolated by their partner as well, because there are all these feelings of worthlessness, low self-confidence, etc. Very often, somebody who's in this kind of situation where they are being abused, they isolate themselves further because they don't have the confidence to step out into the world and talk to other people. So that creates more power in the relationship, towards the abuser as well. And then, of course, there is always this sort of weird paradoxical gratitude that the abused person has for any crumbs of love that they're being given by the abusive partner.
Yeah, and that's because these sort of crumbs of love basically has an effect on the sort of chemistry in our body as well, with hormones. So again, it's like that role, dopamine is released, and dopamine also has a powerful role in addiction. So it is like this addictive cycle. So dopamine in sort of trauma bonding is very powerful, because after that abuse, you have some of that sort of calm where, you know, you may get some physical affection or kind of just some sort of even slight glimpse of affection that triggers your body to release dopamine, which creates a feeling of pleasure in your body and can strengthen that sort of connection with the abuser.
That's true.
Yeah. And basically, you know, as you get that sort of boost, you also want to make the other person happy to kind of gain their affection as well. So you're even working harder. So basically that strengthens that bond even more fully. But it also helps to ease sort of fear. So some of the fears, some of those things start to get eased because of that. So I think, you know, that's some of the chemistry going on in the body. But picking up on what you said about sort of sense of shame, as well, something else that I have experienced and with talking with people in situations of abuse as well is that sometimes that the focus is a lot on the other person and making excuses for them, because, you know, sometimes the abuser, you know, basically it's clear how they've had a struggle in life, they've had difficulties in their life, so, you know, they can't help it because they're, you know, they've had these difficult situations in life, or they've got mental health issues, and you want to be there to support them, and there's that sense of this need to kind of be there for them because, you know, they've had such a challenging time. And again, it's like that rescuer mode as well. So sometimes I think the person being abused is, you know, not always in the role of victim, but they feel that they're that rescuer. So we talked about a drama triangle before as well. So it's that feeling you want to go into the rescuer and rescue this person because they can't help the fact that they are the way that they are. So ironically, you may perceive the person who's the abuser as the victim who can't help the way they're behaving. And actually the person who is the victim is the rescuer thinking, well, I'll stay here. I need to stay there. I need to kind of save them.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That gives you a tiny bit of power, a sense of power and control as well. Maybe, yeah.
Or maybe that kind of false reality power. I'm not even sure if it's about power. I think it's just genuine sort of concern, genuine feeling that, you know, this person can change and hope. I'm not sure that there's any real sense of power or control.
No, you're right. I mean, what's interesting is that, of course, coming back to attachment styles, that both partners in this kind of relationship, in an abusive relationship, tend to be insecure in terms of their attachment style. So most likely, and this is back to the question again, why do people not leave abusive relationships? Well, mostly because they tend to have, they're most likely to have an anxious, preoccupied attachment where they are constantly looking for some ways, some reinforcements that actually they're lovable, etc. They're always looking for this reassurance. And of course, in the kind of love bombing reconciliation cycle of the abuse, that's exactly what they're getting from their partner. So there is this... There's a sort of an attempt also to heal some old attachment wounds in this abuse in the abusive relationship as well, and the partner who is the abuser, arguably, and again I can't remember whether how much research has been done into that. Arguably, the partner who's abusive tends to have an attachment style which is often associated with the fearful attachment, where they're insecurely attached. They haven't had a secure attachment experience in their past as well. And they are kind of going from being avoidant to being anxious. They kind of move between these two sort of scenarios in their relationship. So sometimes they feel dependent on the abused partner, and that makes them very angry. They shouldn't feel dependent on their partner. And that's when they lash out and become abusive, because they have a sense of control in the relationship. They don't feel safe anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So somebody who is more anxiously attached, well, if there's an indication that the partner might not love them or kind of might be leaving them, there's that anxiety level just gets so high in that person that, you know, there's somebody desperate for almost justify anything that the person does to make sure that they don't leave. They want that person to stay with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, because that's like the worst thing in the world. Although, you know, again, somebody who is anxiously attached can also, you know, there are patterns there of things that will be abusive too, or could be, you know, with harassment, for example. So somebody who's anxious maybe would be the person who would be sending text messages like every hour to somebody, or you know, and which essentially to some level also could be experienced in some, you know, as a level of abuse too. So it can be, I think, it being manifested in different ways by the different attachment styles. But I think the key is the sort of insecure attachment tends to be, I think, prevalent with any sort of situations of abuse.
Yeah, and I mean, particularly if there's physical violence also in the relationship, if you're basically being battered by your partner, you haven't got any sense of refuge anymore. Your body is under assault, so to speak. There's nothing that gives you a sense of safety anymore. So you really, all you can do is kind of cower, basically, and protect yourself and absolutely play dead and freeze in the relationship. So also, I just sort of want to make this point that sort of coming back to also, again, about leaving an abusive relationship, it can be incredibly dangerous to leave an abusive relationship. So if you have a very violent, physically violent partner, there might actually be a very good chance that your partner is going to try to kill you. It does happen. I just want to make the point that that there are different forms of abuse, but at this end of the spectrum, where there is physical violence, there have to be a lot of practical steps that have to be put in place for the survivor, the abused partner, to exit the relationship. So you can't say to someone who is under that kind of threat, just go and pack your bags, because they might be hunted down by their partner. So there's got to be a lot of planning that goes, that has to come into action in this kind of scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's finding the right help is really key. So depending on what country you live in, you know, there should be organisations that may help you. So we've put a couple of links in the UK ones that, in the show notes here, just to get in touch with. But some of the signs as well, you know, it might be useful to think about what are some of the signs that that might let you know that you have this trauma bond. So, for example, one would be is when you do try, if you do try to leave a relationship, you feel physically and emotionally distressed. So it becomes very difficult because you get this distress. Also, you know, you may find that actually you do feel unhappy. You usually don't like your partner, but you still feel that you're unable to end the relationship. You know, if you actually do say that you want to leave or indicate you want to leave, the other person promises to make changes but doesn't really do anything about it. You also may find that you tend to make excuses for their behavior. Even if other people express concerns about it, you'll excuse it, you'll defend the behavior. You'll find that you focus more on the good things, so the good days, and just use these as proof that actually, no, this relationship could be good. And it's a sense that you can change the other person, so that you can kind of continue to trust them, that maybe you can change them. And above all, keeping the other person safe, or protecting them by keeping that abusive behaviour secret.
And
that's just a few things that may indicate there's a trauma bond. And, you know, again, you have to be careful with making sure that, you know, one thing isn't generalised, or, you know, we have to kind of, but just being aware, you know, this could be an indicator.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't talked about children. I think we should leave this for another podcast episode. Also, the impact of abusive relationships on your children, because there are all sorts of aspects that play out there as well. Also in the relationship between the abused partner and their children, which is complex and sometimes feeds into this sort of cycle as well. So I think we'll leave it for another time to talk about that. So yeah, so we talked about we talked about the abuse cycle, we talked about trauma bond, and also I think just to highlight again that there are many different forms of abusive relationships. So it might be an extremely physically violent relationship, it might be an extremely emotionally violent relationship. It could be both. It could be either. There are different forms.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, in the UK, we'll put a couple of places that you can get in touch with if you fear or you kind of feel that you may be in an abusive relationship, and places that you can seek some advice and help. And again, in other countries, just search for some of these agencies that will be able to help you. I think in most countries there are some charitable organisations that will kind of you know, offer you free advice and support. And it's really important that you speak to these places as soon as possible if you feel in any sense that you're in an abusive relationship.
Yeah, because it needs to be planned. So kind of leaving the relationship, you should be able to get some help with that, and it needs to be thought through quite carefully. Particularly if there are children involved, particularly if you have a physically violent partner, you need to kind of take some very careful steps here and plan it through.
Yeah, you need to plan it through. And also, actually, because if you've been in a relationship like this for some time, it becomes really difficult to know if it is you or them. And so, you know, because you get so caught up in the deception given by the abuser,
absolutely.
So speaking to somebody, speaking to a professional, not just a friend, because again, you know, that can lead to different interpretations, but speaking to somebody who's specialised in this area, talking this through, can really help you really realise that, you know, this isn't okay, and that you do need to do something about this, because, you know, if it doesn't feel right, you need to kind of really kind of work, take that sense, take that gut instinct, talk to somebody who can really kind of offer you some advice and support and kind of help you get out of that relationship, which ultimately could be really very harmful.
Absolutely. Okay. Do we need to add anything here?
No, I think that's everything for today. Now, like we'll pick some of this up in a later podcast.
Yeah, I think that because there are other aspects of it that we can cover. So we just sort of covered just some of the topics related to, or some of the sort of the important aspects of abusive relationships today.
Yeah, so please tune into our podcast next week and press subscribe if you haven't subscribed already. And we look forward to speaking with you next week.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you then. Take good care. Bye for now.
Bye.